Welcome back to the second part of achieving 100% lighthouse core.
100%.
Yes.
Fireworks, confetti.
We still have the flags.
I burned my hat.
It's the same day still, so.
Yeah, it's like 1 hour later.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Tailwind, so that's a great topic to talk about in a break. So
we took an hour-long break, and during that time, we got frustrated.
Yeah.
Because we talked about development.
Yeah, and especially Tailwind again. So this is, we're in the perfect mood to talk about more Lighthouse-related goodness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to pick off where we left, I guess, which was the ensure mobile responsiveness part.
Yes, I think that's kind of a given now. Like, the first time people were talking about responsive design was so long ago.
Uh-huh.
Like, I had it in
school,
in college,
yeah,
in like 2010.
Uh-huh.
So
but then it was like,
it was hot,
the hype, the hotness.
It was like, oh my god, responsive design, m.youtube.com.
Oh,
you know, like mobile.
Yeah,
it would have its own subdomain.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to get at is responsiveness is a given now. Like, if you make a website,
it has to be responsive.
Yeah.
Like,
unless it's okay, here are all the exceptions.
Oh boy.
Unless it's like you know, an app that's behind a sign in or something, and it's only made for desktop
or mobile.
But if it's mobile, then yeah, I mean, responsiveness 9 out of 10 times is like a synonym to mobile.
Yeah, sure. It's just we live in 2023.
Yeah,
and I still see some websites where you have to rotate your phone.
Oh yeah,
or open it on desktop or mobile, and it gives you like a warning and nothing else.
Yeah, and I know that's their choice, but Lighthouse wouldn't like that.
Lighthouse wouldn't like that. No, and Lighthouse is our Lord and Savior.
It would, you know, imagine it being an actual lighthouse and all the developers are just like on their knees praying for it.
Oh, and we're thinking about we're all just a bunch of moths.
Yeah, that could flame. Be. And then it would, like, if something goes wrong, it shines red, like blinding red.
Oh, shit.
And then all of us go like,
and then we get punished.
And then the lighthouse finds the developer who did it, and all of us like have to kill him.
No, we have to git blame.
Yeah, git blame him, and then we have to physically make sure it never happens again.
Yeah, that sounds like a regular day on the job.
We should imagine an animation like that. That would be pretty interesting.
Huh.
Like our Lord and Savior, the lighthouse.
Shines bright.
Let's go back to it. So mobile responsiveness is something that Lighthouse also checks for, and it's not just, you know, if your website fits and you don't have to zoom in or out or anything. It's also, it checks if distances between buttons, so interactable elements, if the distances are enough.
Mm.
For example, if you have buttons really close to each other, there's a chance that a user would accidentally press the other button than they intended.
Yeah.
So it actually warns you, like, hey, these buttons are too close for unresponsive because you don't have a precision input device.
Yeah. It also gives you warnings about the viewport meta, for example. So I was doing some, you know, screwing around with the scaling size on mobile.
Okay.
Because I had a weird issue with overflow, classic.
Ah.
But yeah, it also complains when you put the initial scale or the width of the device on a weird scale, for example, or you try to disable zoom in, I guess. I don't know what the property is, but there's like a maximum scale you can set. Mm. But as soon as you set it to something, Lighthouse will say, hey, this is a bad sir, and you will get punished now.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how it's opinionated about that. And
it's good.
Yes, for accessibility, it's good.
Yeah.
I just think some websites, like popular websites, don't use the accessible way.
Sure.
They still prevent you from zooming in and stuff.
Yeah, they find other ways also to do that. I mean, but also on iOS at least, they ignore that property for accessibility reasons.
Ooh.
So you can't even...
Would you look at that?
You can't even set it because Apple says, no, that's bad. People have to zoom in when they have bad sight.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's really annoying when it's like, Oh, it looks good. It's like not React, like Reddit on browser or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm trying to zoom in and I can't because it's, I don't think it's, is it Reddit?
Reddit, I guess.
No, the old Reddit would probably let you zoom in because they didn't give a rat's ass about that. Like, it was such an old design.
Yeah.
But I think like companies who are like, no, it has to have an app feel.
Yeah.
So you cannot zoom in because apps don't zoom in. Like, but that's a bad thing.
Yeah, make an app, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, again, with apps, there's other accessibility features that people use, you know, like they have
can change the font size, for example. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can also do it in your browser, but sure.
Yeah. Anyway, responsiveness and mobile friendliness is a big thing as well. So you'll get punished if you don't, you know, apply all the rules correctly or forget about meta tags and stuff like that.
Yep.
Continuing with accessibility, because accessibility has its own category in the Lighthouse test.
Yeah, very good. I'm a huge accessibility nerd, I guess.
Yeah.
So is that what you call it? I don't know.
An advocate.
Advocate. I am really, how do you call that? A defendant, a lord and savior of accessibility.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think developers should should do that too. Every developer should, you know, have accessibility in mind when they develop. Mm-hmm. And they don't a lot of times.
Yeah, accessibility is probably one of the most important ethical things that a developer can easily implement and advocate or fight for. And I think a lot of developers don't really care enough, or the company doesn't care enough, so the developers don't care enough.
I also think that a lot of developers just don't think about it. Like they don't think about semantic, you know, properties, for example, or they don't think about adding a title to an anchor or alt tag to an image, you know, because it's not mandatory to make it work.
Sure.
It works without all that.
Accessibility feels like an extra.
Yeah.
But like, because it doesn't give you a hard error.
Exactly. It doesn't give you like a really clear and direct error. Yeah.
What's funny is like, what if there's like a linter that will prevent you to...
Accessibility linter?
Yeah.
That probably exists.
Yeah. We should probably look into that. But like something that will prevent you from having a build.
Mm. Yeah.
Or even give you like a React-ish error on the screen. Like, hey, you forgot about the area label for this button that doesn't have text in it.
But at least I think that it probably exists, right? But
we'll look into it.
We'll look into it. But for now, Lighthouse also does that for you.
Yes. But like that's a bit, it's better late than never. But
sure.
Like, one of the things we'll come back to is I wish it was in the system, in the development process, a part of our developer,
During development. Yeah, yeah, sure. It, more like an active.
Yes.
Sure.
Our mantra as developers should be like, accessibility is important.
Yeah, very important. I try to run Lighthouse also locally, you know, not only after deploying or whatever and then look at it. It doesn't give you like a perfect example, of course, because when you run it locally, you don't have the server part of it.
Yeah. So it's not like the finished product. So some of the errors are probably. Yeah,
especially related to like performance or what's that category called? Yeah, performance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So images are maybe not minified yet because you are on development, or your JavaScript or CSS is not minified, or the loading of files is not done zipped, you know, gzipped.
Yeah. But so, accessibility is mostly correct, right?
Yeah, nothing changes. There's no difference between like live, how do you call it? Your live product and a local product. So
yeah, as far as like semantics and the
exactly your semantics shouldn't change between local and a live production. So yeah, I always run Lighthouse during the development. So it helps a lot with giving or telling you when you are not using semantic properties, or maybe when there is a better property for it, where you have to add,
that's true,
as you said, area labels to it, for example, And also when you have like an anchor with an image in it, for example, and you don't have any label declared somewhere or like an alt tag or whatever, it will tell you that, hey, maybe you should add a physical label to it to make clear what it does.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I also, I'm not sure if it checks everything thoroughly, but one thing I like to just with every new project is double check what I'm doing with the semantics of the structure of my application or my website.
Yeah.
So for example, when do I use a nav? Is it allowed inside an article, for example? Is a header allowed in an article? You know, like check what the hierarchy and order of things, how they should be working. A big one is also heading tags. So H1, H2, H3.
Yeah.
There is a logic to that. And if you don't follow the standard, you'll actually get messages from Google Lighthouse telling you, hey, your headings don't match up. Like
it's, the order.
Yeah. It should go from H1, H2, H3. But if you go from H1 to H3, so you skip H2, it will actually give you a warning like, hey.
Yeah, the funny thing is that normally or in the past, I guess, Google itself, like the search engine, would give you negative points when you skipped headings.
Exactly.
Nowadays, it doesn't do that anymore. But for accessibility reasons, it is a legit error. Yeah. Like if you skip headings, there is something missing in your order because it does go from like most important to lesser important headings. So if you skip one, there's probably something wrong because it should always go down.
Yeah. Semantically speaking, accessibility speaking, like in those terms, that's an error.
Yeah.
Another, I think like, well, I'm not sure how to approach that one, but like one big issue I had with some developers, like the mindset that headings are styling.
Oh boy, yeah.
So they would use the H1 to H6 tags for styling.
Yeah.
To like style fonts, their sizes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they would abuse the tags, you know, like semantically speaking, they would use like multiple H1s or something. If the size of the font is that big, then they would couple the styling with the tag.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just
I've seen like people do like the native H1 for example. They will put styling on that and then also add a class called H1, and then they would apply that to elements that are, you know, they want to
look like
H1. Look like an H1, but it's not as important as an H1. Yeah. And that's also kind of, you know, iffy because you should already think about like, hey, if I'm doing this, maybe it should be a heading, right?
I'm not sure what you're saying there.
It's like if you're using styling to create something that's, you know, important.
Sure.
Maybe it should be like a semantic H1 because it is important, right? But
I don't agree with that.
No?
No. Semantically speaking, I don't think size matters. Like the size of a font shouldn't dictate if it is the H1 or not. You could have like a motto, a slogan or whatever in like your header that is that's not at all important to the rest of the page because it's like, ooh, flashy. Like, but then underneath it, you could have something that is important, but it's like way smaller and it actually describes what's on the page.
Sure.
And I would make that the H1 because someone who's reading it, even like someone who's like using a screen reader, wouldn't want to read that as the header.
Yeah.
But that's like, it's a philosophy, like semantics and stuff like that. It is something you can like talk about for a very long time.
Mm.
And I think what we're trying to say is just be aware that, you know, when you use H1 tags, it not only affects the styling, but it also affects how people read the page.
Yeah. So especially screen readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Screen readers, even search engines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
What's also important is the color and contrast between elements, and that's also something that Lighthouse does for you. So it tries to check if texts are readable, eligible, how do you call it?
Legible,
that's a word. If they are legible when they are, you know, compared to the background color, for example. So also very nice that it checks that for you. Of course, this should be something that your designer should have already, you know, figured out. But still, it's nice that in the development side, you can also get this information and maybe even try to convince the designer that, hey,
yeah,
this text, you know, it looks fine for us, but might be an issue for, you know, other people.
Yeah. One side note is designers use different applications to design with.
Yeah.
So they're
the profile, I guess.
Yeah. The color profiles in Figma aren't always the same. You can, you can like find the one that resembles Chrome the most.
Yeah.
But even between browsers, there's differences between color profiles.
Mm.
A yellow in Figma isn't the same yellow in Chrome. So it could be way less contrasty, way less saturated. So that's also a side note. Lighthouse uses WCAG, I think, their algorithms, and they're now using version 2, which is a lot more lenient, is less harsh. So you can now use like orange, which used to be mathematically very hard to achieve, you know, like white on orange.
Yeah.
But nowadays, orange is like with WCAG 2, I think 2.1, like there's some versions and they've been like applying human vision to the algorithm.
So nice.
how humans perceive colors is different than what the math in the algorithm tells you.
All right.
So the curve isn't as simple anymore. For some colors, it like it adjusts and it changes, and I think Lighthouse uses that. But if not, you know, just check it with your designer.
Yeah.
Make sure that they use a color profile that works and apply the WCAG, the latest version of the color contrast checker, for your designs.
Yep.
And if you apply it early on, you don't have a lot of headaches later.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's better to fix or prevent this in design than try and fix this in development. But I think it's nice that Lighthouse does this, and it's like the last call. And also, I've used it a bunch of times before to convince a designer to, you know, change something or color.
Yep.
Especially since a lot of times the color is like almost fine, you know. So it's just a bit of an adjustment, and then it looks
exactly
much better for. Well, specific people, I guess.
Yeah, I think. Is there anything else about accessibility that we want to talk about?
I'm not sure if Lighthouse does this. I think it does. But one of my pet peeves, I guess, is that some people use non-interactive elements for interactivity. So they might put a div or a span somewhere and then put on a click event on it. That's also not, you know, accessible, especially, I mean, you can make it kind of accessible by adding a tab index to it, for example, but you're kind of misusing an element that's not made for it, because a div is not, it's for flow content, and it's not, you know.
It's not an interactable element.
It's not an interactable element. And yes.
Semantically, natively speaking, too, it's one thing you got to know is like, yeah, you can bend and break every HTML element to do something else.
Yeah.
But there's a reason that there are a lot of different HTML elements.
Yeah.
See them like ingredients in your recipe. If you know, if you're using salt instead of sugar, you know, it's gonna get salty.
Yeah.
So you might as well just find the right ingredient, use that, and make that work for you.
Yeah.
If it doesn't look right, make it look right. Because buttons, you know, natively have a color, like a border. They have some styling, you know, figure out how to remove that.
Yeah, like honestly, I think a lot of people do use like divs, for example, because they don't want to bother with, you know, the default styling or interactivity that a button does, but there's a reason for it.
Exactly.
And they're also missing a lot of things that a button does in the background by using something that's not made for it. So,
yeah, I don't think Lighthouse checks for this, sadly. I'm not sure, 100% sure.
Yeah, I've never tried it.
So if you as a developer have come across this specific case, let us know.
Yeah.
Did you use Lighthouse for something that we haven't discussed yet? Or is there something that we missed about Lighthouse that you like constantly get notified about? I'm curious because sometimes we just, you know, we have our own way of developing.
Yeah.
And Lighthouse gives us specific responses to that way of developing.
Mm.
And others would maybe get completely different messages and notifications, like warnings about things.
I think it's also skill-based, right? I mean, not saying that all the developers are bad or some, whatever. No, but
it's experience, like, and skill-based.
Yes, yeah, I believe you too, will already fix a lot of things even before running Lighthouse. You know,
most of the time.
A lot of things you're already doing correctly. So when you run Lighthouse, a lot of things that Lighthouse might normally detect is already, you know, done. So
I do have to say that in a lot of situations, I skip on a lot of small things. And because I know I will check myself later.
Hmm.
It's like, you know, a checklist.
Yeah.
And I know that, I can do it beforehand, but it's not functionally necessary to make it work.
Same for me, like alt text, for example.
Exactly.
A lot of times I leave them empty for a while, and then afterwards I'll fill it in. But
because, you know, as a developer, you don't want to focus on things like all the important things for Lighthouse at that moment.
Yeah.
You might want to just, you know, continue working on CSS and not thinking about semantics.
Yeah.
So having this checklist at the end is such a lifesaver sometimes.
Yep. Okay.
So we go to best practices.
Yeah, sure.
So best practices has its own category too in Lighthouse. And I think it's kind of hard to convey everything that's in best practices. Maybe there is a way to say, like, best practices are methods or techniques that you have to apply to ensure that your website is up to standard.
Yep.
And up to standard in today's era is like, you have to have HTTPS, you have to have like favicons, I don't know how you pronounce it, maybe a manifest file, like stuff like that, and other things like broken links that will show up in your best practices category.
Yeah, I'm looking at like the list that best practices checks, and it's a lot of also like allow users to paste into input fields.
Do what? Paste?
Paste, yeah.
Okay.
Allow users to paste into input fields.
Okay.
It also checks that.
I mean, these are all things that are, you know, they should work out of the box.
Yeah.
You shouldn't prevent people from doing their thing.
Yeah. But it also does like check if the HTML doc type is correct or set at least.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty, you know, simple, basic thing to check, but, you know.
It's kind of like a checklist of, hey, what are all the things that should be working? You know, it's like putting it up to a standard.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that because a lot of these things are, if you miss out on them, they're not per se hard to achieve.
Yeah.
But you do forget about them like a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, crap, fav icon. I should probably have one. But I think the best practices and the SEO, which we're going to talk about next, these are like categories that just give you a checklist.
Yeah.
And you just got to check them and fix them.
Yeah. And a lot of times these are also like the most easy to fix.
Mm-hmm.
So
most of the time.
Most of the time.
We've had some really, really tough ones with the SEO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but, I'm curious.
Well, I don't know if I can convey that in a simple conversation, but I'll try.
All right.
It's been a while as well. But yeah, next category is SEO.
Yeah.
That's some people call it SEO.
SEO, wow.
I hate that. Don't call it SEO.
It's an important one, I guess. Again, it depends on what kind of, you know, thing you're building, because a lot of web applications don't necessarily, you know, want or need good SEO. Or maybe they do, but it's just a lot of times the applications are not really built for that. So
yeah.
I think this applies better to like static or generated websites.
SEO is always important for websites with content and that want to, you know, get high on the Google results list. Anything that's private, something like a client.
Like a dashboard, for example.
Client dashboard or something.
Doesn't really matter. I mean, it still can get indexed, I guess, because Google does.
Yeah, but you don't want it to be indexed.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll probably block that. So
But yeah, I think SEO is just, in general terms, it's like if your website can or should be marketed, SEO is important.
Yeah. Yeah, and like it does check a few really basic things, like does the document have a title element? Does the document have a meta description?
Yep.
Does the page give you a successful HTTP status code? You know,
it's, does the page exist?
Yeah, I guess. but also things like do links have descriptive text, for example, and are they crawlable?
Yeah, it's like the next thing for best practices. You know, like the previous category was like on a technical level, and this is more on the how do I score higher in Google results, for example.
It's also funny that image elements must have alt attributes is on here because that's also an accessibility thing. But
yes, it is. But like for SEO, it's very important that your images get associated with keywords.
Yeah, and especially also when you have your images in Google Images, for example, it does use those alt tags too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important. Yeah.
But again, these two categories, best practices and SEO, are very, very, very simple. Mm. You just got to check out the list and check them off one by one.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, I can get into why one SEO issue was really painful.
Uh-huh.
It has to do with canonical links.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
And well, there was a client and they had like 8 different languages for their website.
Ah, fun.
And guess what? Canonical links should refer to like your main page, which also should probably not be, it shouldn't have the language in the URL.
Mm.
So the problem was that I'm not 100% sure, but I think when you switch to a different page, so from English to Dutch, it would change the URL for the canonical link. Mm. It says it changed, but when you look at the source code, it didn't. But and apparently there's some, like, it's very complicated, but if you have like an English page and you have a specific English page as well, like /en or whatever, it will actually count it as a double, a duplicate.
Yeah.
Even though you have one defined as canonical.
Huh.
So it was a weird mix between like, there was duplicate pages because they were, you know, like the same content, duplicate pages, but it would still be necessary to have that English version on some other pages. So like we had to make sure that on an English page, it wouldn't show the EN, but on a non-English page, it would show the EN, stuff like that. And this wasn't something that Lighthouse figured out, like that warned us about it. It was SEMrush, I think.
Hmm.
But it was weird because Lighthouse didn't give that error that the canonical was missing. But SEMrush did because it took more into account, like all the rest of the website, the rest of the app, the pages.
Yeah.
So it checked for duplicates and stuff too.
Interesting. I think Lighthouse only checks if there is a canonical set somewhere and it doesn't check what it is.
Yeah. Maybe it's not even necessary if you don't have multiple pages. Like as long as you don't have multiple languages, then canonical isn't even important.
Hmm.
Or if you don't have like pages that get queried with like search and stuff, then canonical isn't very important because there's only one page. But I think best practices and SEO, again, just check the checklist. If you're missing something, it will tell you and just put it in there.
It's easy.
I think that's, so we talked about performance, accessibility, best practices and SEO, and we talked about like some of the things like lazy loading, assets, responsiveness, stuff like that.
Mm.
I think with all those combined, the next thing is to just do monitoring. If you have your website online and you're, you know, making changes like we did with the podcast website, make sure that you check the performance of your website.
Yeah,
and it is like using tools like Chrome DevTools, Lighthouse, but there's also other things like SEMrush, or I don't know, there's a ton of these like auditing tools. There's like web page tests, Google Page Speed Insights. They all have different things. Google Console, if you upload your website and you let it get indexed, it will also notify you if you have 404s or if your page is like down and stuff like that sometimes.
Yeah, they updated it, I think, recently, and it's become a bit crap, but, you know, that's another topic.
Yeah, it's hard to navigate.
Yeah.
Another thing is maybe just test it on multiple browsers, like in real life.
Yeah.
Try to load your page on 5G, 4G.
Yeah.
See how that performs. See if you can actually like scroll nicely. If you can zoom in or out, stuff like that. Make sure that always works well.
It's fun. Like all these things are, you know, we used to do manually.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's still good to do manually.
Absolutely. It's just like in the earlier days, a lot of people didn't do it or didn't do it properly, and now they still don't do it properly. Mm-hmm. But you know,
there are
a few tools that might help make it a bit easier to do it, but
yeah,
it's still nice to double check and make sure that everything.
It's a free tester.
Yeah,
like imagine having someone who tests your website after you know every build, and it just tells you like a list of things.
Yeah,
it's free. It's open source. It's nice.
Very easy.
Last but not least, the server.
Yeah.
So
there was a big issue for my website, but you know, I fixed that now with Vercel, but. You need a server that is fast, has a quick time to first byte.
Mm-hmm.
Lighthouse will, I don't think, they do tell you that the time to first byte is slow, right? Mm-hmm. Or high, I guess.
It used to be more detailed. I think nowadays they just have a warning that, hey, something's off.
Hmm.
It used to be like it would show you time to first byte and stuff like that separately.
Interesting.
I think they reduced that information and just because. I think like one thing, Lighthouse is opinionated also about performance and how pages should load.
Yeah,
because it's Google and they have their like own rendering pipeline. So a part of that was like, how do we make it objective? And I think they made it more objective by making it less less precise about like what is exactly slowing it down.
Yeah,
and I think that approach was a bit weird for like a nerd that I am, but. It still will tell you if something is slow on the server side or the client side.
Yeah.
So that's what's important. I don't think they show time to first byte separately anymore.
No, I'm trying to find it, but I don't... Like, they call it response time, but that's not necessarily time to first byte, I think. So
it's everything, right? It's like time to first byte, but also how long your page took to load, and then you can... I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. Like, that's the thing, is they made it more vague on purpose so people don't start, you know, like looking at the tiniest things and be like, hey, my server was fast.
Yeah.
But the browser didn't read it fast enough or something. Like, there's like these tiny things that you can argue about for hours, but in the end, it's all about like how fast does it respond.
Yeah.
So they just made it response time.
Yeah. So that it is an important factor, though. Like, I also remember that it has a big impact on the number you get for performance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're self-hosting, I guess it's probably more difficult to figure out what's going on and how to fix that. But I think that's also like the main reason why you probably will get a bad score in performance, because your own hosting is not set up properly.
Yeah. So just to like, from my point of view, hosting is something that is either very straightforward and simple.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what is hosting? It's having a computer connected to a network, open firewall, HTTP server, and then it just runs, like it hosts the files.
Yeah.
And if you have server-side code like PHP, it runs a worker to run that PHP and then give you a result, and the server will then be accessible through the internet, through the network that it has, and that's it. You know, it's not more complicated than that. But if you're self-hosting and you have a VPS, most of the time there's multiple layers, and you might even have like plugins that like do the firewall.
Yeah.
Think about like cPanel or Plesk or Web Admin or whatever it's called nowadays.
Yeah.
All these like hosting software.
Yeah, they all have a bunch of like network filters and firewalls, and it's all, you know, It's a lot.
It's also obfuscated to debug what's going on if you don't.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah, if you're a professional at it, I'm pretty sure you can figure it out. But, you know, for your average Joe.
I wouldn't, you know, start working on that. If your time to first byte is very slow and you're hosting it yourself, try to see if you can, like, simplify the hosting layers.
Stack, yeah.
Yeah, the layers, the stack, whatever. Yeah. Like, see if you can find something less convoluted or is more natively.
Yeah.
So I would honestly say, for example, I've had better experiences with shared hosting as far as time to first byte goes than VPS with like cPanel.
Yeah, I think with shared, like the company itself, you know, does all the performance and all the maintenance of the server. Mm-hmm. So they have like, they will make sure that it runs fast, you know, or fast enough at least.
Exactly.
And when you run your own VPS, you have to do all that stuff yourself. And if you know what you're doing, you know, you probably know exactly how to get all the performance out of it. But again, I think like for a regular developer, might be a bit too much.
Yeah.
So again, I'm really happy to, I finally got rid of my VPS after, I don't know, like 10 years or something like that. It's a long time. And I switched to Vercel, and now everything is smooth and runs very fast, and I get the beautiful 100 scores on performance.
Nice.
Yeah. I think like for a lot of big bigger companies will at least have, you know, a dedicated team that does all the server performance and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it shouldn't be an issue for you as a developer. Of course, you might be able to tell, you know, your server team to, you know, that there are issues currently with the response time.
Yes.
So again, I think Lighthouse is also a very good tool to tell others that they have to do their job differently or, you know, have to fix something.
That's true.
So because the end product is the website, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that Lighthouse tests. So
yeah, I think it's pretty interesting that you say that. It's not just for developers directly, like not the person's writing code.
Mm.
It's for the whole team.
Yeah, exactly. For the whole product.
Yes. And with that, I kind of want to conclude that, you know, that 100% is a magical number. And honestly, with a lot of projects I've worked on, I couldn't achieve that.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah. The performance, especially, like, again, best practices, SEO, you can probably get there if you can get into the CMS or whatever, the templates and everything like that. You can probably get there, but performance, oof, that's a tough one because a lot of times the elements of the internet, the network, the server, the way that things are hosted, the CDNs you use, the distance from you to the server. There's so many like issues that you don't have full control over.
Yeah.
So achieving that 100% score may not always be necessary or practical, and it might not be achievable at all in all cases.
Mm.
But what Lighthouse does teach us is just that we got to focus on improving the user experience and performance of our websites. And then, you know, the best practices and the tools it gives us with, you know, contrast checking and stuff like that, it's all built in. It will guide us to just having better methods to optimize our websites.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main takeaway is use Lighthouse, not just to, you know, performance test and focus on that number, but also do all the other things and see that like your score will go up and might not go to 100%, but all the other things will be better. Your users will be happier. You will be, you know, more. I think you would be more proud of your product if you see that you have no warnings.
Yeah. I think like Lighthouse is, as you said, not necessarily for the developers, but for the whole team, but also I think for the end user eventually, because it makes sure that the end user will, you know, not encounter a slow website or has not a right contrast between links or whatever, or text, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's, again, we are building for users in the end. Mm-hmm. And Lighthouse is another tool that makes sure that the end user will be probably happy. And that makes me happy.
Yes, because the internet is not for developers only.
Exactly.
It's for people who don't even know how to write a single line of code.
Yes, we are the tool, the tools. Yes.
We are the creators.
Wow.
We're the dreamers of dreams.
Wow.
We
are gods.
not really, but we are masters and we are in control of our domain.
Yeah.
So, you know, make use of that tool. And maybe if your team is like, oh man, another thing we got to like take care of, you know, like another step with our process. Mm-hmm. Think of it as this way. It's like, if you're already having trouble with that concept, you probably don't have good testing.
Yeah.
So this is like the minimum effort for testing if your application or website is up to standard.
Yeah, it's a really low, how do you call that, gap?
Bar.
A bar, I guess, yeah.
Threshold
bar, mm-hmm. To just create something great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's it, right?
Yeah, I want to head off and, you know, look at that 100% again on the Twitter, because that's a dream.
Yeah, I'll go to my website and run it again.
Oh, please, man. Please. Stop boasting.
Posting. I'm just proud.
Wow. See, this is what happens,
yeah,
when developers get that 100%.
100%. I made it, mama. All right. Thank you for listening and perhaps watching.
Yeah. Don't forget, we would like to have your input.
Yeah.
On things.
Absolutely.
If you use Lighthouse or you've never used Lighthouse, hit us up. You know, we also would like to have a conversation with you through other mediums. If you want to have it. Talk with us?
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't even care if it's about Lighthouse or not. Just, no. You know, if you want to talk about Tailwind, we can, you know, we can try and find your address and, you know, burn your house down, I guess.
Tailwind is a really cool tool. No, I like working with Tailwind.
I'm kidding. I
don't have a gun to my head right now.
I don't mind. It's just, yeah, we love to hear from you in any way whatsoever, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's positive and not, you know.
Yeah.
No, I think we're also fine with feedback.
Yeah.
Everything is welcome.
Except for, okay, now we're good.
No.
We're good. We're good.
We're good. Good. We're good. Just talk to us, you know. Well, see you next time. And have a great day.
We're out. Bye.
Bye-bye.